All right. Welcome everyone to the November 1st Verifiable Credentials API call. I will put our agenda in the chat channel. And I will share my screen. On the agenda today, we've just got this agenda review, introductions, and relevant community updates. I forgot to mention pull requests. We have a number of pull requests, so we'll go over those. And then we will go into our main agenda, which is seeing if credential ID makes sense and update credential status. We'll talk about how the protocol deals with requesting client features. We are hoping for an update on kind of use cases, Eric, Joe, if that's possible. Sorry to put y'all on the spot, but this was an issue that was in the queue and about time for discussion again, and then any other issues as time permits. Are there any other changes or updates to the agenda before we start? Okay. Is there anyone new to the call? Vivian, I think you might be new, or a reintro would be great from you.
Yeah, sure. So this is Vivian from MavenNet.
Awesome. Welcome to the call, Vivian. Anyone else new to the call? I don't think so. I think everyone's been here before. All right. Well, welcome again, Vivian. Wonderful to have you on the call. All right. Relevant community updates. Let's see. There are some special topic calls that folks here might be really interested in around verifiable credentials. The Verifiable Credentials Working Group has had a special topic call. Those minutes will be published on that mailing list. It has to do with making that context optional, which could have a variety of consequences. So make sure you're paying attention to that if you were not on the special topic call today. The other thing that's happening in 2 weeks, well, next week is the Internet Identity Workshop. How many people here are going to be there? Should we cancel next week?
Okay. I'm surprised it's next week already. So yeah. Yes, please, let's cancel.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, is anyone going to be there?
I will be.
Okay.
But if I'm the only one, maybe we don't need to cancel. I think both Eric and I are going to go.
Okay, cool. Fun. London.
Which event is this?
The IETF.
I was going to say. Yeah.
I missed
you didn't miss me. So.
I'm sorry. Yeah, next week is IETF.
That's like, really? Next week?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
next week is IETF. The week after is IIW. We will cancel for IIW. Do we need to cancel next week for IETF? Okay. So I'm guessing no. None of us are going to IETF. Okay, good. So we'll have the meeting next week, but the week after that is definitely canceled. And I think the week after that is U.S. Thanksgiving, if I remember correctly. Okay, good. So we'll have the meeting next week and then a 2 week break. Any other announcements or things we should be aware of before we get into our agenda? Okay. Next up is processing pull requests. Here is the link in the chat channel. I'm going to go on these in the order that they were raised. So the first one, the group has been discussing for a while publishing a version of the VC API that could be published as a note, a draft note in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. That was raised in issue 304. We had some discussion. There was a request to basically take exchanges out and make a couple of modifications, or we requested that. We have made those changes to the request, and then those requests were carried through in the PR. So today we have a so this is 320. Prepare document for publication as VCGW note. I'll put this in the chat channel there. And so what this PR does is it branches off of the main repository. So it takes the latest version of what we're working on right now. And then it deletes all the things that all of us agreed to delete. So it deletes exchanges, it deletes, you know, that from the YAML files, from the OAS files. So it deletes all that stuff and deletes all the content talking about it. So the only thing that's left is the standard API. So you can look at a rendering of it here. So down here in the issue, I've published a rendering of the specification here, which has the front matter content, you know, empty design goals, the architecture overview, description of the apps. And then issuing, verifying, and presenting. You'll note that all the exchanges stuff has been deleted, and the spec doesn't mention exchanges anywhere in there. So the basic stuff here that in theory should be non-controversial is in there. And that's what we have right now. We were, the last time we talked, unsure about how we would manage this, but I've found a way to do this through GitHub that looks like it's pretty easy. Let me kind of highlight what the problem is. A note as published through a W3C working group has zero intellectual property rights protection, zero IPR protection. In this group, in the CCG, we at least have some, right? Which means that everyone participating in this has agreed to the credentials community group, IPR policy. So there is IPR protection on this thing that we're creating together. If we were to move that as a note into the VCWG and give full access and control over the VCWG, they would have zero IPR protection on it. So the suggestion is, let's keep the specification in this group, so there's IPR protection on it. But what we can do is we can fork the specification into the VCWG and have this branch, main VCWG, published as the VC Verifiable Credentials Working Group version of a draft note. That means that we can continue to work on the spec here. Our work here is not, you know, compromised or disturbed in any way. We continue to have IPR protection here. But we are also able to simultaneously publish a note, in the Verifiable Credentials, Working Group. Okay. So that's kind of the PR and the suggestion on how we would, manage this. Questions, comments, concerns? Go ahead, Dave.
My one concern would be if the VCWG wanted to make any kind of changes or whatever they wanted to do with the note, that might not be a goal, but if they did, I would be worried about the IPR stuff. Would we tell them those changes should flow back through the CCG for that reason?
Probably, and there may be a couple of people in the group that get super cranky about that, and they're like, we need control over the VC API spec. So that's just a conversation we'll have to have with that group. Ideally, what we do is we're like, oh yeah, that's a great change. Please raise an issue on the, in the CCG and then make a change to the spec. And the next time we make a snapshot for the draft note, we'll include those changes.
That sounds good.
Okay. The other thing is if you have not already approved this PR and you want this thing to go through, please, please do a PR review and approval on it. Don't have to do it right now, but please get to it at some point, over the next week. Okay. Any other concerns about the VCWG draft note on VC API? All right. If not, moving on to, the next, PR, and I have not seen these yet. Andrew raised something about adding a 404 as a response for get delete credentials ID and same for verifiable credentials. It seems like a pretty reasonable thing. So if that thing with the ID doesn't exist, you get a 404 for it. And we don't need to, you know, discuss today. This is just raising awareness to the group that there's a PR that does this in here. This seems pretty reasonable. All right. Next, up is add verifiable presentation to exchange examples. Corrects a mistake where the exchange examples didn't match the exchange continue schema. Dave, you've taken a look at this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I believe there was another PR that made it in a little while ago that fixed up the exchanges spec somewhere, and the examples just were not brought along with that, is my understanding of this PR, and that just fixes that up.
Okay. The only thing I did take a quick look at this. The only thing that I was a bit concerned about is, like, there's a lot of changes here, so we might need to carefully.
Yeah, it looks like that. It should, people should carefully look at it, but I think that's mostly because of an indentation. So this text just got moved to the right. Because the change that was made to the exchanges was the adding the top level property verifiable presentation. And so instead of dropping a presentation directly into the payload, we have that property there. And we've been talking about that over the last few weeks.
Okay, so this thing is really the only significant change.
That is my understanding, yep.
Okay, all right. Well, everyone keep a close eye out as you're looking to make sure that that's true, because we just want to make a small change here, not a big one. All right, and then finally add verifiable presentation request property to exchange initiate. Again, these are schema changes. And Longley, looks like you've reviewed this one as well.
Yeah, my comment. So this change is in line with those other ones we just discussed, making sure we have a top-level property. And so this was a change to the schema to do the same. And then my comment here is just about the technical detail of that. I just don't know if this is, I haven't made any of these changes to the schema before, and I don't know if this is precisely the right way to do it. That's all.
I think it is. Yeah, it's confusing, but it's just a weird OAS thing, OAS YAML thing. Anyway, everyone should pay attention to this as well. Okay. I think that's it for pull requests. Any other questions, comments, concerns about the PRs? The only thing to point out here is this thing is never going to be merged. We're going to have a perma, never to be merged branch called main-vcwg that will be what the VCWG cuts their draft notes for VC API off of. So I think I'll probably close this PR after about a week. And then we'll bring it up in the VCWG. Go ahead, Logan. No audio from you, Logan. I think you're still muted. Oh, sorry, Logan. You might try just refreshing your browser. Someone else had that bug, right, where you couldn't unmute?
That has happened to me before, yeah.
Okay. Do we know if it's like a Firefox Safari thing?
No idea.
Okay. Logan, can you unmute? Still no. It's grayed out. Interesting. Unmute. Okay, so Logan asks if there's a need for IPR protections for the note if the intention is just to run the test suite. So everyone should check with their favorite legal counsel on what I'm about to say. This is not legal advice at all. I am not a lawyer. Typically, you always want IPR protections on anything that's potentially going to become a standard of some kind. Any kind of gap in IPR protection means that somebody could sneak some kind of patented thing or in their own intellectual property into it, and you don't have any kind of recourse. So usually you just want a very nice, complete IPR story for the thing that you're working on. We have such a story for the VC API specification. If we were to take what we are working on right now and hand it over to the Verifiable Credential Working Group, it would create an event that the second we handed it over, it has no IPR protection whatsoever. And so people can talk and say things and raise issues and add PRs and all that kind of stuff. And whatever they do there, they can do without having to worry about announcing that they have a patent on the thing that they are saying they're putting into the standard or any of that stuff, right? And so is there a need for IPR protections for the note? Absolutely, because we do not want to end up where there's a gap in IPR protections. Companies, there are some companies on this planet that look for openings like that or try to play games when specifications are not IPR protected. Hope that answers the question, Logan. Greg said it best, patent trolls. Yeah, so anyway, that's going to be the argument to the Verifiable Credentials Working Group, and then we'll see if anybody has any brighter ideas on how we can manage this. All right.
Patent trolls particularly look at standards and go after standards. I've had bad dealings with them.
Yeah.
So that's what they do.
They're particularly nasty lot. Okay. Thank you for that, Greg. Let's get into our primary agenda here, which is use of credential ID when you do update credential status. Link for that is here. And I will open a tab to that. Okay, so the general question, have we gotten it? We've talked about this back in March of this year. Do you require a credential ID when you update a credential status? Marcus is saying it might not fit all use cases, especially use cases where you don't want to give your credential an ID. Not quite sure if the field's required. We discussed this back in March, April timeframe. Everyone can read this to catch up. I don't want to read out loud. Yeah, so I don't think there's a clear resolution here from the last time we talked about this. I think it is definitely known that it is possible to issue a verifiable credential that doesn't have an ID. And then once you do that, there's, I guess, no way of accessing it unless you iterate through every credential you've ever issued to get its, you know, endpoint URL thing. Go ahead, Joe.
What component is this residing on? Who's asking for a GET? From whom?
That's an excellent question. I don't know because I'm not the one that suggested this endpoint. Go ahead, Dave.
I didn't get on here to answer Joe's question, but I think the answer is the issuer coordinator this is a GET for getting the status, or for changing the status, I would think. And then the issuing service would have the endpoint to allow the status to be changed in some way. I don't know. I haven't looked closely to see that whether the API spec text says that the credential ID that's used must necessarily reference the ID field of the credential. Perhaps there's, certainly if you don't have any handle for accessing a credential at all, I don't see how you could implement this endpoint. But I understand that there are use cases where people want to have credentials that don't have IDs that are, that use the ID field in the credential. But maybe internally there's some other ID that could be stored and used in the issuing system. And when you specify the credential ID field, that could map into some internal space that the issuer has and is able to look up the credential. In short, I don't see how we could possibly get rid of this field. But what we might need to clarify or figure out is whether or not the field needs to necessarily map to the credential.id field in a credential.
Sorry, taking notes. Go ahead, Joe.
Two things. One, I think Dave's hit the nail on the head in that the identifiers do not have to be the same identifier. So that may be a solution. You could use a hash or actually the content of the VC itself as a parameter, right? Update by example. I don't necessarily like that approach. I wouldn't recommend it to my clients, but we could do that to get around the ID field. But I think the better option is to just say, hey, the ID doesn't need to be the ID in the credential. It needs to be an identifier in the status architecture for that record.
Thanks, Joe. Dave, you said something about this is associated with the issuer coordinator.
Yeah, the issuer coordinator would be responsible for doing an update to the status, and it would be hitting the issuer service, giving it some identifier that the service knows how to use to dereference the credential that's meant to be updated.
Yeah, it's important there, Manu, in your note. It's a call from the issuer coordinator to the issuer service. So in the language I've been advocating about which component is it on, this would be on the issuer service as a component, and it's expected to be called by the issuer coordinator.
Yep, agreed. All right. Is this enough to write a PR? it's a bit hand wavy if we're going to say, well, I think we can, it's a bit hand wavy, isn't it?
What is the value of the ID field?
The credential.id field?
And the API. Do we have an expected structure of what that ID field needs to be?
I don't remember. This is in,
yeah, so the field that has to be sent is credential ID. That's two words using camel case. And I don't think we say very much about it. But what we should do is add some text that says this needs to map to a credential. The issuer needs to know how to map that to a credential. That mapping may include mapping it to the credential.id field, or it may not. And issuers are responsible for making sure there wouldn't be any conflicts. You know, you could get into a situation where if you have a set of credential, you want the names, you want the namespace to be clean. So, any credential ID that is handed to you should not be able, you shouldn't be able to find two different credentials as a result of it. It should uniquely identify one credential in your issuing system.
From that issuer.
From that issuer. It is also the case, we should probably just go ahead and say this so that it's simple. The credential.id field, in the VC data model is a URI that's supposed to be, globally unambiguous. The credential ID field should be the same. And issuers should make sure that when they generate identifiers for their credentials, the ones that they use internally can't be somehow in conflict with the ones that are exposed through the credential.id field.
Okay. Is that enough to write a PR? Probably. But we are kind of hand waving around, like, we're leaving it up to implementers to do the mapping. So, you know, what happens when, I don't understand how when something is issued, where that is signaled to the receiver, to the in the response call, like, do we give it back like in the metadata?
So this is one of the reasons why we wanted to make sure that when the credential is issued, there's a top level property like credential, a verifiable credential, which I believe we made sure that we do. So if the credential itself does not have a credential.id field, you could place a different top level property, and we should probably call it credential ID, so that it maps to this field we're using here, and put the credential ID there. And so an issuer coordinator would need to keep track of that information in some way, or be able to find it again in some way. And that's very hand wavy. We haven't said how that would work.
Okay. Logan, I'm sorry. I don't know if that was an old queue or a new queue. I was assuming it was an old queue. Okay, thanks. Okay, I mean, that feels enough to write a PR. I don't know if I'm super happy about that type of PR. Are there any other people that have reservations around this language, or should we attempt a PR and see where we go from there? Go ahead, Greg.
Let me see, since I'm an outsider, we've got the unique URL we're supposed to use to identify the credential, right? That's the credential.id that we have to have in the credential, correct? And then
just to jump in real quick, you technically don't have to have one. So that's really where the mess comes in. Yep. Go ahead.
And then we have, how are we going to talk to the API about this credential that has, say, already been issued and we'd like to get an update or a status on it, right? And so I kind of think, well, if I had that other URL, that may not be the same place I talk to the API. It might be symbolic, but it may have a subfield within it that I would use to talk to the API, right? Some, you know, the number part of the ID, like we see in the examples when I've been reading the docs. So, you know, that's where I kind of see, okay, we have this one field kind of identifies it. And then we have this other use of something similar. So is that getting kind of like why we've got this bit of this issue? Anybody?
I think so. I'm trying to parse through what you mean by the update on the status. So this endpoint here is to set the status of a given credential. So if you're going to revoke the credential, you need to, and actually, I'm not sure this lives on the issuer service, but I think that's a fair debate and not vital to this point. It may live on the status service,
okay.
but that's an architectural difference. This is not an endpoint for someone other than the issuer coordinator to do anything. So if you're the holder or you're the verifier, this is not an endpoint you would use for that credential.
Okay, so I don't want to go back to that language that I thought you guys were getting away with, away from internal versus external interface, but this is definitely not a holder talking to the issuer.
That's right.
Okay. Don't know if that helped at all.
there is another property, which is the refresh endpoint, which I think is closer to what you were looking for in terms of the holder saying, hey, I need a refreshed version of this VC. And that's a different function.
Gotcha.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, so to try and walk through on the fly here, how I would expect a system to use this credential identifier. You can imagine a system that has a set of users that it wants to issue credentials to. Those users could, you know, authenticate into their system using whatever mechanism is desirable, and then they could choose to receive a credential. And when they make that choice, a credential identifier could be generated that would be bound to that user's internal record, and this would be somewhere like in the issuer coordinator system. And so it would be a binding between that local user account of sorts and the credential that they're going to be receiving. And then that credential ID could then be used when you're generating the credential. And it could either go into the credential.id field, or it could just be stored internally in the issuing system where some kind of, or the status service, where some kind of binding and linkages between a credential and its current status. And so it might be more the case that instead of assuming that these issuing services will generate IDs for you, you'll be managing your own ID space, generating some kind of ID, linking that to some local record. And then that ID either goes into the credential.id field or it doesn't. But you can always reference the credential that is linked to a particular user account. So if you need to suspend it or revoke it or change some status in some other way, you know, hey, this is the user I need to change their credential status for. You ask your system to give you the credential ID, and then you can use that to make the change to the status.
So I have a question around how, if the status service, sorry, if the, where's this endpoint? It's on, yeah, it's the issue, it's the issuing service. When it issues a credential, how does it communicate what the credential ID is back to the caller if you don't set credential ID.
So I think it's the case that the caller should be saying what the ID is, and the issuing service should use whatever ID was presented, was handed to it. And only if there's some kind of conflict, like that credential already exists, should there be an error generated. That way the caller has complete control over, what ID gets used and whether or not it appears in a credential. And what we probably are missing, the gap that we probably have here is being able to specify the credential ID property to the issuing service when you ask it to issue a credential, so that it has an identifier to keep track of it. If it has status that could change. So, you know, we're trying to cover a number of use cases. We have credentials that don't have status, so their status is never going to change. And those credentials may or may not have IDs. And then we have credentials that have status, and that status might change, and those may or may not have IDs. And whoever is calling into the issuing service should be providing the identifiers so that the issuing service can store those and enable status changes if there's status on the credential. So that keeps the control over the identifiers and the identifier space in the hands of the party that's using this third-party software to do the issuing. And it's only the responsibility of that issuing party to let them know whether or not they have a conflict in ID.
All right. So how many PRs is this? We need a PR to specify credential ID. Need to raise a PR that specifies how credential.
Hold on one second. I've been confused about this credential ID. So, assuming there's no queue.
No queue.
So this credential ID is a new property being proposed for the VCDM. So it's a property of the VC?
No, it is not.
Okay. That's where I got lost. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. This is just for this API so that you can communicate to the issuing service. Here's an identifier for this credential that I will use later to refer to it because I'm not going to use the VCDM's identifier property.
Got it. Perfect.
Okay, so we need to raise a PR that specifies how credential ID is set when calling credentials issue. Right? In that ID, is this ID, this credential ID, the thing that you can do a get/credentials/credential ID on?
Yes. If you do not specify credential.id in the credential you send to the issuing service, then, and you want to be able to refer to that credential, you must specify credential ID, the field you've most recently typed.
And what happens if you don't do it? Do you throw an error or you auto-generate?
No, because there's a use case that's totally valid for specifying a credential that has no status and no ID.
Okay. We got combinatorics on this. We need to raise a PR that specifies how credential ID is set when calling credentials issue. That value is what is used when making a call to get credentials, blah, blah, blah. It is possible to not set this value. It is also possible that credential ID is set, and if that's set, then that value becomes credential ID. Did I get that right?
Yeah, the flowchart is really if the credential has credential.id, that field is used. That's the simplest case. The next case is if credential.id is not set.
Slow down. Sure. Credential is used for credential ID. If credential.
There is no credential.id,
uh-huh.
Then you may optionally specify credential ID, camel case version.
Yeah. New name. Okay.
And if you don't specify it, you won't be able to change the status on a credential. If you do, then you can change the status, provided that you've also specified whatever type of status you need to. That's also open here in the credential.
So what was the last thing you said? If you don't specify it, you can't change the status.
Period. You know, full stop. And then if you do specify it, then you can change the status on a credential using that field if the credential also has a status to be changed that is changeable.
Okay. Okay. Do we want, that's fine and I think is consistent. Do we want to explore the auto generation of something and specifying that in the HTTP header that's sent back, like the location? You know, how when you do a, like, what is it, 201 create, you can specify a location.
I think the second we do that, then we change who's responsible for creating the identifiers, mm-hmm. or we make it possible to change. Possible to decide which party is responsible. And I don't think we should take on that complexity if we don't need it. So let's not do that now.
Service. Okay, all right. So is this the only PR that we need to raise? It feels complete. Any other concerns, comments, trepidation? Going once, going twice. All right. Well, that's good. I will mark this ready for PR. And we will go on our merry way. All right. Next up, this one is going to take more than 10 minutes, but we can get started. Requesting client features, issue 280. I already had that open. All right. How are client features requested by the server during exchanges, during a verifiable presentation request? So the general thing, the general issue is, how does an issuer say, I need you to did auth using these did methods, or I only support these crypto suites, or things of that nature? There was a proposal put forward. I think Tobias had some concerns about this. This was back in April. And we haven't talked about this yet here in the group, I guess. So there's a suggestion. The way didauth is, covered in the VC API today, there's a did authentication flow, and a part of the did authentication flow. Actually, maybe it would be better to bring this up, EP request spec. So in the verifiable presentation request spec, there's a section on did authentication. And the question is, how do you request client features? How do you, as the server, tell the client, hey, I need you to do these things in these specific ways, or I only support these crypto suites, or I only support these did methods? Go ahead, Dave.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Recue then. right now, we have a mechanism in did authentication, that, says these are my accepted methods. You can also list crypto suites. These are the crypto suites that I support. as a query that comes across, right? And that can really be for any kind of client provided feature. So it can be either a feature that the client has, or it can be like a very specific credential that the individual has or the digital wallet has. So like if the issuer was like, I want to make sure that your, before I give you this credential or before you did auth, I want to make sure that your keys are protected in an HSM for whatever reason, right? And then that query goes to the client, and it's up to the client on whether or not they want to respond to that or not, to tell them what their capabilities are, right? One of the reasons it's been proposed this way is because you don't want the wallet to just blanket convey all of the DID methods that you have access to and all the crypto suites you propose. That could be a privacy violation, right? And so what has been proposed is, let's make it so that the server says, these are the things that I could accept from you. And then as a client, you can pick which one of those things you want to use, or you can choose to not respond at all. Okay, so with that is kind of, you know, that's where this came from. Over to you, Dave.
Yeah, so I would try to tweak the framing of this a little bit. Instead of saying, let's find out the client features, which does get into the fingerprinting case, which we want to avoid. What we're really saying is the party that is looking to authenticate someone using a client, says, these are the things I accept. You have to have these things. And that means either, you know, it means I will give you a list of the things that I accept. You choose whatever you want from that list. And if you don't have something on that list, we're not compatible. But if you have something on that list, choose something and communicate with me. And if there's a set of things that, aren't part of the protocol necessarily, but are a set of things that the issuer wants to ensure that you have, as you mentioned, you know, storing keys in an HSM or something like that, then what the client would respond to that by saying, well, here's a VC, from some auditing party or something that says, that I meet your requirements, whatever that is. So you're either responding back by choosing some protocol to speak, or some DID method to use, or you're presenting, or the client is presenting VCs that say, you know, I meet whatever your requirements are. And in all of those cases, I think it makes the most sense to have the issuer say, I will accept this stuff. Now you choose. And that avoids the fingerprinting problem.
Thanks, Dave. Patrick, you're in the queue.
Yeah, so just a few questions. Like, when we talk about this, is it more of a what I need kind of endpoint, or more of a what I can do?
Well, I think in this case we're talking about the verifier. I keep using the term issuer because I'm imagining someone picking up a credential, but in that case, they're really playing the role of verifier when you're asking someone to do a DID authentication. And what they're doing in that case is they're saying, I want you to do a DID authentication, and here are the DID methods, for example, that I accept in the crypto suites that I would be able to check. So there is sort of a crossover between what I can do and what I can accept, but it's really just about what I would accept. And it doesn't really matter if I can do these other things. If I wouldn't accept them, that's not relevant to this interaction.
Because and is this something that would be like endpoint specific, or is just more like a bold sort of discovery endpoint that you can filter the results? Because in your example, you're mentioning like a verifier, but wouldn't this kind of feature be also interesting on issuer, for example?
Yeah. In the context of having this be on an issuer, I think it's when the issuer is playing a role of verifier because they want someone to do a DID authentication before they issue them a VC. So it would be happening on an issuing system, but they'd be playing the role of a verifier. But I think what's important here is we're talking about doing all this through a verifiable presentation request, which could be sent by any party, but it's generally when that party is playing the role of verifier because they want you to do some kind of authentication and prove that you control the DID or prove that you have some set of VCs.
Okay. And is this specifically scoped for authentication?
I think when you're asking another party for a verifiable presentation, you're asking them to provide you with VCs that they have. And usually, but not always, you want an authentication proof over the whole presentation, proving control of some DID that may be bound in some way to either those credentials or some other important field. You might have previously, for example, bound a DID to a user in your system.
Okay.
So it does seem like it's very, very much associated with authentication.
Okay. And one final question. What is this something that's supposed to be used like programmatically, or is it sort of more of a like discovery, like it would return you the method it supports with maybe some documentation URL, and then you implement this, and after that you can correctly communicate with that agent? Or is it something that's more meant to be used in the process every time and you take action based on the return here?
Mono's on the queue, but my view is this is mostly the latter. It's for programmatic, someone wants to do a DID auth somewhere, they request a VC, and the issuer in the role of verifier says, well, if you want this VC, I need you to DID auth first. And so this is in a protocol message, and their client is going to process that. And they might offer the user some choices, you know, do you want to use this DID or that DID, if that's an option, but then it's responded to.
Okay. Thank you.
I just put myself on the queue to end the meeting. So this is great. Good start to the conversation. We're not done with it. We'll pick it up next week. The group will continue discussion on this item next week. All right. With that, thank you everyone for the great engagement as always. Really appreciate that. We will meet again next week, where we will continue this conversation and a couple of other issues. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of the week. Chat with you next week. Bye.